This came right on the heels of Trump's visits to Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas. In a time of national tragedy, we look to the president, of course, to console a nation.
Some of President Trump's own aides are conceding his visits to two cities in mourning didn't go as planned after new video shows him bragging about crowd sizes while at a hospital in El Paso.
I was here 3 months ago. We made a speech, and we had a what was the name of the arena? That place was packed, right? And there was some crowd.
Thank you.
And we had twice the number outside. And then he had this crazy Beto. Beto had like 400 people in a parking lot. They said his crowd was wonderful.
Wow. Look. We all know how much Trump struggles to do the bare minimum of being a president, but it's still genuinely shocking just how much he struggles to do the bare minimum of being a person. Because just consider the thought process that happened there. He visited a hospital filled with victims of a mass shooting and thought to himself, remember that other time when I was the center of attention and it was better? And then he thought, do you think anyone else remembers that? Then he thought, I should remind them, right? Then he thought, great idea. Then he thought, thank you. Then he thought, Ivanka. Then he thought, no time! And then he said it. And he was happy with how it sounded.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. My lamp beside the golden door.
Would you also agree that Emma Lazarus's words etched on the Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, your poor, are also part of the American ethos?
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge. That plaque was put on the Statue of Liberty at almost the same time as the first public charge law was passed. Very interesting timing.
Although you mentioned the American dream is built on this idea that this is a place where you can come and build a life.
Starting in October, poor immigrants will be denied permanent legal status if they are deemed likely to use government benefit programs. The plan was unveiled by head of immigration services, Ken Cuccinelli. The Cooch defended his policy targeting Latinos when asked if it would target Latinos.
Why shouldn't the Latino community feel targeted by this?
The same question might have been asked when my Italian immigrants were coming, immigrant ancestors were coming. If we had been having this conversation 100 years ago, it would have applied to more Italians.
Luckily, we're not having this conversation 100 years ago, or else I wouldn't be up here today to pull up the ladder between he and my family. Suck it, Hispanics. You've been cooched! Then a reporter asked Cuccinelli if this new rule goes against the poem on the Statue of Liberty, and he said this.
I'm certainly not prepared to take anything down off the Statue of Liberty. We have a long history of being one of the most welcoming nations in the world. I do not think by any means we're ready to take anything off the Statue of Liberty.
We don't want to take anything away from that poem. We just had, ultimately just want to add one word. Psych. Wow. Trump. Wow. Trump. Trump wasn't at the White House today. He was at his golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey. And so instead of the spacious White House lawn, he held the press conference about 6 inches from the whirling blades. And he had this to yell about his new immigration policy.
I don't think it's fair to have the American taxpayer. You know, it's about America first. I don't think it's fair to have the American taxpayer paying for people to come into the United States.
American taxpayers should only cover the important stuff, like my helicopter rides to and from the Gulf.
Emily Lazarus's poem on the Statue of Liberty here, because it seems that the president, or at least this administration, really has very strong views about that particular poem, because I want you to listen to Stephen Miller in his own words.
I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty.
All right, so they seem like they have a little...
He should just stop going on air. But
that's really...
They seem like they have like a beef with the words of the Statue of Liberty, because they're not shying away from it, and Ken Cuccinelli doubled down on his interpretation of what that means, saying that it, you know, the wretched part of it means, oh, that was in reference to Europeans, because if you weren't a noble back then, that it was, that you were wretched. It seems like it's more than just... You know,
I think it's not necessarily the Statue of Liberty, the poem there, as much as what Basil said, the elitism there, and this anti-immigration sentiment that they're using.
Washington Post, President Trump has now made more than 12,000 false or misleading claims since he took office 2.5 years ago. 12,000. If Trump's nose grew every time he told a lie, he could use it as a zip line straight to Vladimir Putin's bedroom. 12,000. We figured it out. At 10 seconds per lie, if you were to read all the lies he's told aloud, it would take 33 hours to get through them all. Trump has now told even more whoppers than he's eaten, and that's a lot. On Friday, President Trump left Washington for a 10-day vacation, which he insists is not a vacation. So make that 12,001. Thanks for the song.
From Gush, Irving, Berlin, XTC, Golden, Earring,
and thanks to
Sarah, Sanders, Rod, Serling, Rudy, Giuliani, Ali, Belshi, Seth, Myers, Stephen, Colbert,
Chris,
Matthews, Anderson, Kupel, O'Reilly, Janine, Piro, Oliver, Sasha, Ingvar, Ken, Cuccinelli, Stephen, Miller,
Jimmy
Kimmel.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Band coming down the street. Well, try to imagine with me, if you will, that you were the first to see the band coming down the way, growing bigger and bigger, and your heart pounding harder and harder. It always seemed to me that my heart was in perfect time with the big bass drum. How you got that go to glory feeling? Feeling in your heart and in your mind and in your blood that some folk call religion. There are multitudes of people crying because they just won't try to understand. From the book I read, not one but all must follow him. Come and join the magnificent sanctuary band. There are multitudes, people dying. Seem like temptation rules over the land. You know those people should remember his commandments. Come and join the magnificent sanctuary band. Singing in a band, talking to the man. Sheep all over the world as fast as they can. Sing in a band,
join the sanctuary band. The Son of Man speaks of revelation. Oh, he's reaching out his hand. He has promised to bring us all salvation. Come and join the magnificent sanctuary band. Sing in a band, talking to the man. Bringing in the sheep all over the world as fast as they can.
Brian McCormick and Jareen Ahmed from the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much for having us.
What is the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, and what do you each do with this organization?
The Columbia County Sanctuary Movement organizes with immigrants and allies to collectively support, empower, and defend our communities. My name is Brian McCormick, and I'm the executive director of the organization and one of the co-founders.
My name is Jareen, and I have joined Sanctuary officially a couple months ago, but I've been involved with the organization since it has started as a volunteer. And my concentration of work in the organization is to provide legal assistance to documented and undocumented immigrants in our area.
So how do you define what Sanctuary is, and what are some of the other activities that your organization is involved in?
I think the word sanctuary is very easy to have misconceptions about. Sanctuary derives a lot of its meaning from a religious space, a space of refuge. And the sanctuary movement, the original one that came about in the 80s for political dissidents fleeing Central America due to mostly United States oppression there, that took on that religious meaning and was mostly a faith-based movement. It happened in the south of the country, and it's evolved. And as you know, in New York City, for example, you have the New Sanctuary Movement. The idea of sanctuary city legislation is a very wide array of policies, but the foundation of it is prohibiting local law enforcement collaboration with ICE. So any local law enforcement that collaborates with ICE, they're doing so voluntarily. There's nothing by law that makes a local police department collaborate with ICE unless you voluntarily sign an agreement or voluntarily cooperate with them.
You all must be super busy as an organization right now. Can you just talk a little bit about some of the campaigns and your focus areas?
Well, our focus areas for the last couple of months have been the Greenlight campaign. And we were the regional coordinators for the campaign itself. Most of our energy has been going to that area, that specific project. But we have been working on other things within our organization. And one of the biggest things that I feel that we diligently work around is providing rides for families. And the Greenlight campaign weaves into this because that would eliminate our efforts of trying to drive people around if they can drive themselves. And it's such a sensitive area because people are unable to reach their appointments, their interviews because of that. I think the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement started off initially with the driving the families around and trying to get them to places that they need to be. So I think we have a deep-rooted kind of like an understanding of getting the Green Light campaign to become active and for undocumented immigrants to be able to get licenses because we work so hard around that area. Some of the other projects include finding housing for immigrants, undocumented, documented. We provide legal clinics, referrals. We find legal assistance and representation for people in our area. We conduct Know Your Rights trainings in the area where we educate undocumented immigrants and documented immigrants about rights and what they can do when ICE starts approaching them at their doors or at their workplaces and what is possible and what's not possible for ICE to do with them and things like that. And that's become very popular.
Could you briefly describe some of that? I know it's a whole training, but could you briefly describe like what is the most essential things out of that training that someone listening to this should know?
The essential parts of the Know Your Right trainings are the warrants. So differentiating between what an administrative warrant is and a judicial warrant is one of the main aspects. Because when ICE comes to your door, initial reaction is, where's the warrant? And they hand you a piece of paper. But people often don't understand that they don't have to abide by that warrant. And there are several aspects in that warrant that we point out. We also discuss some of the actions they should take, like not opening their doors or what they can do if they're in a vehicle or what they can do if they're just walking on the street and things like that, and what kind of information ICE can take from them.
What's been the reaction from the local government? Are they cooperative with your goals?
We took a very holistic approach to working with the government. We were formed in 2016, in October of 2016. One of the first initiatives that we started was to make Hudson a sanctuary city, or as known in policy, a welcoming and inclusive city. We actually started by going to the police committee of the Common Council. We wanted to start head on with who we thought would probably be our main opposition within the city, and try to clarify really what this policy looked like and demystify what the media was calling it. It was, of course, a rocky start, I would say. There was a lot of misconception as well as what I would identify as racism. I think most people would identify as racism, such as the chief of police actually said on video in a Common Council meeting, well, a police committee meeting, he said, "There are dozens, no hundreds, of illegals in Hudson, and you don't see us going around arresting them." So I asked him, "I would love to know how you define somebody who's illegal, because there's literally not a definition that make or a law that makes a human being illegal. And secondarily, I would like to know how you were able to identify them." And his response was, "Well, I saw them." So it was clear racial profiling. Maybe not the same extent that we see in Rensselaer County, where they're adamantly anti-immigrant and actively working with the administration, but there was still that sentiment. So after that, we continued to go to informal Common Council meetings. We went to formal Common Council meetings, and it wasn't until March of 2017 that we passed a resolution with the Common Council. I think a lot of that was attributed to our ability to redefine the space of the Common Council. It's a space that immigrants don't often go to, absent some of the elected officials, especially from the Bangladeshi community that are representing people there. Absent those people, a lot of immigrants and people of color are not going to the city council meetings. So this was probably, not only was it probably the largest turnout or one of the largest turnouts for a city council meeting, but it was very diverse, and immigrants were telling their own stories there. So we used it as a way to really build our movement and mobilize both immigrants and allies. And after the resolution came into effect, because a resolution is not legally binding, we had to organize with the mayor at the time, who we pushed to issue an executive order, which is binding on the police department. And it wasn't until we actually refused to leave her office Like, we weren't getting the traction that we needed, and we couldn't get the meeting that we wanted. And so a handful of us just went and sat next to her office until she arrived, and we told her that our community needed this. And one of the co-founders, Gloria Martinez, spoke about, you know, what it was like growing up in a mixed status family, and almost brought the mayor to tears. And we left that meeting, and literally within the hour, it was on social media that she had issued, the mayor at the time had issued this executive order, but she didn't commit in the meeting to issue it. It was like, we moved her to.
What was the executive order for?
It was called a welcoming, and it replicated the resolution, but enumerated the processes and procedures that police would abide by in a number of situations, such as like asking for identification or what you do if there's a warrant present, et cetera. So that's some of the nitty gritty that I mean, like the foundation of sanctuary city policy is lack of collaboration or prohibiting collaboration, but there's a lot of different ways that what that looks like.
We are quickly running out of time, but I was wondering if you followed any of Troy City Council and the push to make Troy a sanctuary city or pass the FACT Act and our mayor's response, and if you had any response to what's happened in Troy.
We work very closely with Ice Free Capital District and Troy Sanctuary Campaign, and Delilah is an amazing leader that we worked very close with throughout the Greenlight campaign. So I was present for one or two city council meetings, and I also was kind of briefed on everything that was happening in the meetings behind the scenes as well. And I think that the community and the council did an amazing job of showing the sentiments of the city of Troy, and it's unfortunate that the mayor has a lack of courage and leadership to not only not embrace the resolution, but actually veto it. So that's very disappointing. It's a sign of the change that needs to come, and also that this isn't a partisan issue. Democrats and Republicans built this machine together, and Democrats and Republicans are also anti-immigrant.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha? Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away. Little,
우리 팬들은 러시안 소리 있습니다. 이번에 메아스고 프리즈 펠로 머피노 프라리 예 우임 캐스트니 마크다 예 우임 캐스트니 마크다 Ближняя моя, если пса я едно, ой, что поет, ой, едно, на южный опоет, я не сожгу его. Слив не волосы, фос, но не ах, я мору в хабби, не хую, а за сын не слах.
The 90.7 FM
Ica.
Copic.
Caro.
Catskill. Greenport. Claverack. Kinderhook.
Greenville.
Germantown.
Wyndham. Greenville.
Schoharie.
Green County.
Patrick. Ashland.
Chatham.
And East Durham.
Athens.
Haines Falls. Hunter.
And, Coxsackie.
Preston Hollow. Oak Hill.
Anchor.
Great Barrington.
Hawthorne Valley.
New Baltimore. And
Hudson, New York.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, I guess so. I don't know about that.
We have 18 known listeners. Sometimes it's more than that.
Alan, I just got word from the ratings group that we are the number one rated show on this station.
Who said?
Well, I kind of made that up.
We are the number one. You mean we get more listeners than anyone else?
Yeah, that's all it could mean, right?
Well, they're driving around in their cars.
That's why it's good to be on the drive
going
time
to work,
slot. Yeah.
Coming home.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to WJXC in the morning. I listen to Democracy Now.
Yeah.
And then I listen to Lincoln Mayorga.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just, you know, when I'm in the car, like you said, yeah. I just flip the channels now and then, and it's amazing, you know.
Yeah. It is. And keep us going here, folks. You know, we're making a new kind of constant request that you become sustaining members because it makes it a lot, or supporting members. It makes it a lot easier and will take the pressure off all these pledge drives we have to do. So if you can, yeah, as low as I, you know, I went on the site, Ellen,
because
I'm going to, instead of giving each pledge drive, I'm going to do like you're doing, give monthly.
Well, you know, it's kind of painless.
It's totally painless.
It works through your credit card.
Right.
You have a chance at any time to change the amount you're giving every month, I believe.
Right. And it's as low as $5 a month. I mean, who can't afford that these days? It's a
Some
cup of coffee
can't.
If you go to these fancy coffee places.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street. You belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jack Sensabaugh of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
Dead Man Walking, The Return of the Federal Death Penalty. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On July 25th, in a surprise announcement, U.S. Attorney General William Barr said the federal government would be resuming executions, with five scheduled in the coming months. This overturns an effective moratorium on the federal death penalty that has lasted over 16 years. Barr said,
"Punishment must be swift."
Just a week later, President Donald Trump exploited the mass killings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, by demanding not an assault weapons ban, but more executions.
Today, I'm also directing the Department of Justice to propose legislation ensuring that those who commit hate crimes and mass murders face the death penalty, and that this capital punishment be delivered quickly, decisively, and without years of needless delay.
Needless delay? Since 1973, over 160 wrongfully convicted people have been freed from death row. In fact, the death penalty is rapidly losing favor in the United States. 21 states and the District of Columbia have banned executions, while four more states have formal moratoriums in place. Around the world, 106 countries have outlawed capital punishment. Another 28 either have moratoria or don't carry out the death sentences. Trump's death penalty dictate is a tragic step backward.
I'm not surprised that William Barr did this or the Trump administration wants to expedite federal executions.
So says renowned anti-death penalty activist Sister Helen Prejean, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
It's their whole way of approaching everything, that the way is through violence to try to solve social problems. The federal death penalty is not going to be any more equal justice under law than the state death penalties have been. The mood in the country is to shut the death penalty down, first in practice and then gradually state by state to repeal it. The way the federal death penalty has always worked, it's been up to the discretion of individual federal prosecutors. So we've had side by side, whereas in Manhattan, in New York, the federal prosecutors never went for the death penalty. Over in Texas, they were always going for the death penalty. And this will be no different.
Helen Prejean is the Catholic nun who rose to global prominence in 1995 after her book Dead Man Walking, an eyewitness account of the death penalty, was turned into an Oscar-winning film starring Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn. In her new memoir, River of Fire, Sister Prejean eloquently describes the path that led her from a life as a semi-cloistered young nun in New Orleans in the 1960s to become one of the world's most celebrated and effective campaigners against capital punishment. In her new book, she writes, "From years on the road talking with people in every state of this nation, I realize most folks have never reflected deeply about capital punishment, have almost no information about how the penalty actually works or doesn't work." Sister Prejean co-founded a group, Survive, that works with the families of murder victims. Bud Welch lost his daughter, Julie, in the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, which killed 168 people. Timothy McVeigh would later be executed for the crime. Bud Welch said on Democracy Now!,
"One cannot go through the healing process at all when you're living with revenge. And that's all the death penalty is revenge. It is not a deterrent. It doesn't, as the media says, bring closure to family members."
The Death Penalty Information Center presents clear and compelling statistics on the 2,500 people currently on death row in the United States and how unjustly the death penalty is implemented. The most significant factors in determining whether or not a person is given the death penalty are the location where they're tried, whether they're poor, and the race of the victim. For example, over half of all death sentences are handed down in just 2% of U.S. counties. Similarly, over three-quarters of capital punishment cases involve murders where the victim was white. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, quote, "In Louisiana, the odds of a death sentence were 97% higher for those whose victim was white than for those whose victim was black. Jurors in Washington state are three times more likely to recommend a death sentence for a black defendant than for a white defendant in a similar case," the center said. Not only is the death penalty administered in an unjust, biased way, but it's also irreversible. Death is final. Clifford Williams Jr. and Charles Ray Finch became the 165th and 166th death row prisoners to be exonerated. Each of these innocent African-American men spent over 40 years on death row. With the expedited execution schedule fancied by Trump and Barr, they would have long been dead. Again, Sister Helen Prejean speaking about Trump and Barr's decision.
They also seem to have no understanding about how the courts work. They can claim all they want that they're going to fast track this and speed up these executions. But there is the Constitution and there are the appeals.
While her focus remains on grassroots organizing, Sister Prejean also points to the importance of dedicated death penalty defense attorneys. One such lawyer is Brian Stevenson, founder of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. The group's legacy museum and its accompanying lynching memorial are deeply moving, documenting the 400-year history of African Americans from enslavement to Jim Crow to the current crisis of mass incarceration. Said Stevenson on Democracy Now!
The death penalty is lynching's stepson.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
This is Elizabeth Press, and I'm joined by Brian McCormick from the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement here to talk about Greenlight. Thank you so much for joining us on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you for having us.
I believe New York State recently, in June, became the 13th state to grant driver's license to undocumented folks.
Yeah, that's correct. And also Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia also have similar legislation. And here in New York, it came after over a decades-long fight. And this recent iteration of it was a huge coalition effort known as the Greenlight Coalition. And CCSM served as the Capital Region coordinator of that coalition.
So what is Greenlight New York?
As I mentioned, Greenlight New York is a coalition of organizations throughout New York State that came together with the purpose of restoring equal access to driver's licenses. I say restore because prior to 9/11, immigrants, regardless of immigration status, were able to apply for driver's licenses. And after 9/11, that right was revoked. We've been fighting for decades, and in this recent iteration, we were successful. And now, starting in December, as long as things play out in court as we anticipate they will, immigrants, regardless of status, will be able to once again apply for driver's licenses.
Could you just outline some of the benefits of granting licenses?
Yeah, of course. So from our perspective, I would, you know, want to acknowledge the humanistic reasons why it's important for people to be able to drive their kids to school, to get to work, to go to the hospital, all the normal things that people do in their daily lives that require transportation, especially in rural areas where public transportation might not be available or is very costly. There's the economic portion, the revenue that will be created in the one-time revenue that the state of New York will receive, as well as the annual revenue that will come from registrations, from licenses, from purchasing of motor vehicles, from tolls, everything that's associated with, and buying cars, of course, everything that's associated with the auto industry and traveling. Then there is also public safety benefits. So we know that hundreds of thousands of people in the state of New York are driving without licenses right now. What that also means is those people did not have to pass a driver's test and did not have to go through a driver's safety course, and also may not be insured or may not be insured in their own name. And so with restoring the access to driver's licenses, we can guarantee a majority of people who are undocumented that are driving will be able to get licenses, will be able to pass all of those requirements as everybody else has, and will be driving insured vehicles. So those are some of the main benefits that we see with Greenlight.
Excellent. Here in Rensselaer County, we've heard a lot of the critique. We have a rebellious county clerk who says that he's going to find a way to pass on the information of people registered to ICE. Can you explain the critique?
Yeah, of course. So the critique that we've seen is anti-immigrant. They have publicly stated both their anti-immigrant sentiment and an argument that this is about the law, not about immigration. However, when pressed on that, such as in their press conference at the Rensselaer DMV, the county clerk actually said, "I will hang a sign outside of the DMV that says we call ICE." And the same county clerk has bragged that he will not issue driver's licenses to undocumented people. And that is actually somewhat hypocritical because he has been, in my understanding, in the county clerk seat for about 30 years. And so if he actually did his job 30 years ago, he did indeed issue driver's licenses to undocumented people because the law was that undocumented people could get driver's licenses at that time. I think it's a broader anti-immigrant sentiment that exists amongst elected officials here in Rensselaer County. You have the 287G agreement with the sheriff and the federal government, which deputizes some of their officers to be ICE agents or act as ICE agents. You have the county clerk, and then you also have the county executive who recently joined in this. As you mentioned, the county clerk pledged to find a way to share this information with ICE, and the way that they decided to do so was to pass on all of the information that comes through the motor voter program at the DMV to the Board of Elections, which is normal, but the Board of Elections has now stated that they will pass that information onto ICE. So that has actually triggered a lawsuit against the county of Rensselaer. It's led by Demos as the lead legal counsel. Actually, the Albany Law School has now become of counsel to the suit as well. And one of our coordinating committee members from CCSM named Jen Ben is one of the main individual plaintiffs in the lawsuit. And CCSM, as part of the New York Immigration Coalition, is one of the lead organizational plaintiffs. And the idea of the lawsuit is really that by saying that you're going to pass on this voter information to ICE is an intimidation tactic. It's a violation of the Voters Rights Act. And we believe that if we continue to unite as organizations, as we did around Greenlight, we will be victorious in defending this in court and making sure not only that people have access to driver's licenses, but that information is not shared with ICE. And I should also note the legislation that was passed in New York has the strongest privacy protections out of all 13 states. And there are a number of ways in which that the information that people present at the DMV is protected, both in how it's stored, how it's gathered, and how not it can be shared.
If people listening to this interview are inspired to do something now related to what's happening in Rensselaer County, what is the best way to get them involved?
As an organization who has gained notoriety over this year, national notoriety, even international notoriety because of our Know Your Rights video that went viral, in which two ICE officers tried to get me to allow them to take two individuals out of my car. I refused to do so because a judicial warrant wasn't present. They only had an administrative warrant, which doesn't force me to do anything with or anyone else with a private space, such as a vehicle, home, or a kitchen of a restaurant, for example. Because of that notoriety, we've gotten that question a lot. And what we always encourage people to do is to find a local organization to connect to. So we do organizing in the Capital Region, especially with Greenlight. We encourage people to connect with organizations like ICE Free Capital District, Saratoga Immigration Coalition, Centro Civico, Capital District Latinos, and the Troy Sanctuary Movement. And we will continue to work with those organizations to bring some of our experience to the Capital Region. I know we're planning some Know Your Rights trainings up here, and also educational forums on implementing Greenlight. So what information is needed in order to get a license, and then also how can allies play a role in accompaniment to DMVs, especially hostile DMVs like Rensselaer County.
Excellent. I know the Troy Sanctuary Movement does provide rides right now for folks who need to get to their appointments and such. Once Greenlight is put into effect and people are able to get driver's licenses, this need that's constant right now will decrease. Can you speak a little bit about that sort of benefit?
With CCSM, we really try to take a holistic approach to our organizing. We consider our model to be a service to organizing model. So the idea is that we provide different services like transportation, translation, legal support, and that is a way to support the community but also activate them to be agents of change themselves. And the flip side of that accompaniment is something like the green light. So the service is the transportation. The systemic change is changing the legislation. We do anticipate that literally hundreds of thousands of people will then have will now have access to driver's licenses, and so the capacity contributing to transportation will decrease. But of course, there's still going to be individuals that don't get licenses for concerns or because they're not able to drive, they don't want to drive, and people who are not of driving age. And additionally, there's long transportation, like to immigration court in Buffalo, that some might not want to take on by themselves as well.
Thank you, Brian. One last question, and I know you touched on it already, but Rensselaer County is the only county in New York State that's participating in the 287G program. Can you just explain a little bit about what that is about?
The basics of a 287G agreement is that it's an agreement between a local law enforcement agency and the federal government, ICE specifically, that deputizes the local officers to be ICE agents. And so they can go out and enforce federal laws around immigration. And also that agreement makes Rensselaer County Jail the jail where ICE detainees are now held. So as you all probably know, it was Albany County Jail. As you also probably know, Sheriff Apple had a very different approach to what that detainment meant and what kind of services can be provided to individuals. And so we've seen ICE completely shift away from Albany County Jail and now start using Rensselaer County Jail. And again, I think that agreement is just very clear identifier of anti-immigrant sentiment and the establishment's willingness to be part of the deportation machine that this federal administration is creating.
Brian McCormick, how can people get in touch with Columbia County Sanctuary Movement?
There's so many different things you can do to support your immigrant neighbors and be good allies and accomplices. You can reach out to us at sanctuarycolumbiacounty.org. You can find us on Facebook. And if you have an emergency, you can reach out to our hotline at 518-303-3848.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha? Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet. And when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home, with trees and flowers and chirping birds. Weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away.
Yeah, William Kestis, you're not gonna. Thank you.